Hello, funky listeners, and welcome to another episode of Funk Radio. This is your host, Kyle.
And that's your host, Kyle.
And that's your host, Peter.
And I'm your host, Peter.
Yay for redundancy, the cornerstone of our podcast. terrible. Yeah. So, what are we talking about today, Mr. Peter?
So, I've been doing a little bit more research into, you know, smaller, interesting historical topics that we can discuss on this show. This particular one actually has, I kind of have to spend a few minutes explaining like how I got to this topic. But first I'll say really quick like what the topic's about. So I discovered that there was this thing called the voiceograph, which basically was kind of like a phone booth. Yes, it was introduced in the 1940s by a company called International Mutoscope. Essentially, this was kind of like an entertainment thing that, you know, you people would go inside this booth and they can record. They could record roughly, I think it was just over a minute, like 65 seconds or something of spoken audio. And then as they're talking, it's recording them and cutting to vinyl at like real time. And then when they're done, after a minute or so, it spits out this vinyl record that you can take home and play on any record you want. And we'll get more into the reasons of like how it worked or why it was a thing and whatnot. But to kind of take a few steps back, I want to explain how I got to this. So basically, I was trying to do research on whether it, like throughout history, whether it was actually possible for people to record their own vinyl records at home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever heard anything about that.
The only thing I've heard of that we talked about before is that process where you could create like a playlist at your local record store, and they would combine them into a thing for you. But I thought that was for CDs, not records.
That was for tapes.
Tapes,
and
sorry.
That's okay. It was, what was that thing called? The Personic system.
Yes. But I've never heard of anything like that for vinyl records. The only thing I've heard for them that I thought was actually kind of interesting is people somehow pirating vinyl records. I don't know. It's a weird, laborious process where you basically, like, duplicate the record on wax and you almost create like a reverse pressing of it, if that makes sense.
Oh.
And then you fill that pressing with wax or vinyl or I don't know, and from that mold, and you then basically have a duplicate. But it's like weird process.
I wonder if we talked about that in our bootlegs episode.
Good question. We may have. I don't remember. I don't remember what I had for breakfast, so it's not saying
actually
much.
Looking back at our episode list, the two things we just mentioned were only a few episodes apart. So the Personic system thing, listeners, if you want to hear more about that, it was pretty interesting. That's episode 172. And then 175 was, we talked a bit about bootlegs.
Very cool.
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I've never really heard too much about, recording your own vinyl records. I do know, and I don't know how familiar you are, Kyle, with, the old TV show, The Honeymooners from the 50s.
Yeah, with that guy.
Jackie Gleason.
Jackie Gleason. I was like, Jack something. Yeah.
Jackson. there's Jackson. So since before I was born, my parents have had like an encyclopedic knowledge of that show.
Interesting.
So I've grown up knowing very much about it. In the episodes and everything. Anyway, there is one episode in that show where the main character Ralph and his wife Alice basically split up because they have a huge fight because he hates her mother. His friend Ed Norton says, "Hey, I have an idea," and he brings out this thing that looks like a record player, but you can actually speak into a microphone and it will record onto the record. And he's saying, obviously, you know, she doesn't want to see right now, but if you record like a heartfelt message, we can mail it to her and then she'll come home. And there's all hijinks that happen because of that. And it's funny and stressful at the same time. But I had never like seen or heard anything about that before, like having like an in-home record player that lets you record yourself. And so I was curious, like, is that a thing? Or was that just like a fictional thing they made up for the show? For a long time, I was like, okay, this must not be real because I cannot find anything about this. I finally did find some information, which actually did confirm that that technology did exist. They introduced it around the 1930s, and it went on in some form until about the 1950s. I don't really have a lot of information about like what specific products were sold, but I know companies like RCA Victor were trying to push basically these, you know, recordable record players. But they were not really popular on the market because they were just so goddamn expensive for the time. Converting into today's dollars, they were somewhere roughly between $500 and $1,500.
Jeez.
Which is kind of a lot of money, especially considering that when they introduced these, it was pretty much in the middle of the Great Depression. So
yeah,
there's no reason that anyone's going to be buying these things. So they really never caught on, and there's almost no information about these things online, even to the point where I didn't feel comfortable pursuing this as like a topic in itself, just because there's so little information. It's basically from Wikipedia without primary sources.
That's our whole show, Peter. Come on.
I know. But so I didn't feel comfortable building an episode on that idea just because there's not enough reliable information. But while researching that, I also learned about this voiceograph thing, which there is quite a bit of information on. So I figured we could kind of take it in that direction instead. So that's my half hour long explanation of.
It was only like 8 minutes. Yeah. No, that's actually really cool. I'm curious, because you say these things were essentially like a phone booth.
Yeah.
Do you know if these were often found in record stores at the time? Were they placed outside? Is it like you could go into a park and do it? Or
so these voiceograph booths were mainly found at places like fairgrounds, arcades, tourist attractions. Some of the more famous ones, there's one there was at the time, I believe, from the 1940s onward, there was one of these on the 86th floor observation deck of the Empire State Building. I think that's kind of where like the more popular one was. There was also, I think, probably a few at Coney Island, kind of places like that.
I have a funny question. One that's in the Empire State Building, do you think that people would often record like suicide notes on one of those before they jumped off?
I really hope nobody ever did that. But you never know.
Morbid mind.
That is really morbid. I don't know. God, I hope not.
Right?
Jeez. Anyway, so so I think it's an interesting concept overall from kind of a couple of perspectives. One, that you can go and just record yourself and take this home. I mean, even, you know, for the time, that was kind of an interesting concept. But also from a more technical standpoint, just having a machine that can record you and, you know, cut the vinyl real time as you're talking, I thought that's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know if there's other technologies that have kind of done that same thing, to my knowledge. I guess that kind of ties it back into what I was, spending 10 minutes talking about.
Now, I'm curious. Again, I don't know if you found like mechanical blueprints of how these worked, but if it's cutting into the record based on what you're saying, it would have to be some sort of like precision pressured device, you know, that's cutting into the needle that's responding to the modulation in your voice, I guess. I don't know. I'm kind of
right.
It's trying to get my mind around that.
I don't know that level of
technicals,
like how technical stuff, how it worked. I imagine it was pretty similar to how they cut records normally, which again, I probably don't know as much as I should about that. But yeah, I really, a lot of the information I can find was kind of more high level stuff. And there's a lot of images actually of what these things look like and, you know, old advertisements and that, but it's more, you know, in an advertisement, it's not going to say like that on that level how it works.
Yeah.
So I actually cannot answer that.
No worries. I was just kind of thinking out loud.
Yeah. So some other technical facts. So you could record a set about 65 seconds, recorded on a small 6-inch diameter record. And apparently the customer could select from either 45 RPM or 78 RPM as the playback speed. Huh. I don't really know why you would
do 78. If you did 78,
well, maybe you could actually explain like why that was a bad idea. I don't really know like why you would give them two options for that.
Well,
I think, well, with 78, you would, at that RPM, it's obviously going faster. So with the same size of record, you would probably have less time.
Yeah, exactly.
To record, I mean, right?
My guess would be that maybe they gave you the option because some record players at the time that played 78 RPM couldn't play 45 or vice versa.
That's an interesting thought.
Honestly, like, I would need to go more in depth into the history of 78 RPM records because I don't know. I don't even know when they stopped making them. I just know by the 60s they were pretty much dead.
What? So regular, normal, like standard size records. I mean, what are those? 33 and a third.
Yep. And then.
And then 45 is the other mm-hmm. common one for the small ones.
Exactly. And yeah, 45 records. You know, you've seen them. They're like little 7-inch discs. And yeah. they I think they usually hold about 5 minutes on each side. That's why 45 usually has one song on each side.
Right.
But comparably, you know, a regular 33 and a third record is 12 inches in diameter, and it holds
yeah.
probably a good 30 minutes on each side, roughly.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my only guess, is they give you options because maybe at the time there was like a transitioning of record players and speeds. Maybe 78 record players didn't play 45s or whatever.
Maybe.
But I can't say for certain.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a small detail. Yeah, I guess I'm kind of curious about that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like I said, these things are 6 inches, and I think probably most of them played at 45 RPM. So, and by comparison, kind of like what you were just saying is a regular 45 RPM record is 7 inches and holds roughly 5 minutes versus yes. 6 inches and 1 minute. So I don't, I'm imagining that maybe because of the technical ability of the machine, like it can't cut the record at the same precision that a regular like record studio might have.
Yeah, true.
Which is why they can't put as much. Also, maybe they didn't really necessarily want people sitting in the booth for 5-10 minutes.
Also, yeah, maybe they had like an arbitrary limit, like, oh, you can record a minute because otherwise people are just going to be, you know, clogging the booth.
Yeah.
No pun intended. Speaking of clogging the booth, again, this is just something I'm thinking of out loud. I guarantee you there's probably not really an answer for it. I've seen that when actual record cutting machines cut records, when they're cutting grooves into the vinyl, it spits out this kind of black confetti because, you know, it's cutting material out of the vinyl to create the grooves. And in this scenario, if it's doing it live. If it's doing it live while people are recording, I'm curious how the machine dealt with that excess material, you know?
Right.
Was there like some sort of like, I don't know, filter it went into, and then some guy would just come and clean it out every night?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. My brain was actually wondering similar things mm-hmm. about that. I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I didn't expect you to. I was just thinking.
Yeah, I don't know how that worked. I mean, I'm to be honest, I'm just overall, I'm impressed that, especially for the time, that they could put essentially, you know, a record or a recording apparatus in such a small space.
Yeah, very good point.
I mean, yeah, a phone booth sized box isn't super small, but I mean, compared to a record studio.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty cool.
Exactly.
So going a little bit further into like the purpose of this thing, like obviously you can do it just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could probably compare it to, you know, like a photo booth or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it interesting that another purpose behind this, I don't think they built it for this reason, but eventually it was used a lot for this, was especially because this kind of came around during the war years of World War II. A lot of people used this to record voice messages and then mail the records to their friends or loved ones.
Oh, that's really cool.
Essentially as a talking telegram.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think it was built for that reason, but that became like one of the main ways uses. It was used.
That's really cool, actually. Like spouses could record things for their husbands at war or whatever.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting. And on that note, actually, you know, whether or not you were using it for that, when the record was generated, you know, when you were done with your session, it also came with its own little paper sleeve that you could actually use to mail it, you know, to whoever.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me like, you know, some people I'm sure took them home and just kept them for themselves. But it seemed like a lot of the idea was to record yourself and then, you know, mail it to somebody.
Like as a gift, yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. And I didn't think about that being a reason for using them.
So yeah, like I said, this thing started around the 40s. By the 1960s or so, it basically was becoming old and obsolete, and they kind of died off around that decade. Interestingly, a lot of the reason why it kind of went away was because by the time the 1960s rolled around, you started to see the advent of personal tape recorders. So, you know, and we've talked about different, you know, formats a billion times on the show, mm-hmm. but I think it's interesting that during the vinyl record era, there was never really much in the way of recording your own stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Not until the advent of like, you know, what do you call them? Cassette tapes or, oh my God, I'm totally spacing myself today. 8-tracks. There wasn't really a way to kind of record yourself onto a playable audio format, you know, in any sort of convenient way until the 60s. That's kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah. So, I mean, once that actually did. So, like I said, like that really was not a thing until personal tape recorders became a thing. But once they did, other ways of recording yourself, even if it was just, you know, a gimmick, you know, in the way of the voiceograph, there was really no reason people saw to really do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of one of the big factors that kind of put this thing to rest. And I'm thinking even, I think tape might, like, you know, cassette tapes, I want to say even in the technologies that came after that, I think tapes may still like stand as the most convenient form of self-recording.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't count phones nowadays, I guess.
Unless you count, you know, taking a video of yourself with your phone.
But yeah, I mean.
But if we're talking about CDs, there was.
Yeah, there wasn't really a convenient way to record onto CDs until the advent of the CD-ROM for computers. And even then, it wasn't like a one-to-one. You know, you had to record it and then basically have it burned to the CD. It never just spit it out instantaneously when you were done, like a tape does.
Well, even you know, if we're using our own show as an example, I mean, we, you know, in order to do this, you know, you need to have a computer set up, you need to have a microphone, you need software to basically save
the audio files,
save these recordings at, you know, as a playbackable format. And like you said, with CDs, I mean, yeah, you can record yourself and then burn it onto a CD. But, you know, if we're talking about convenience here,
mm-hmm.
I mean, tape, I think, definitely takes the cake by far.
That's it. I say we record all of our future episodes on tape and just pass them out. Listen to my demo.
That'd be really interesting, actually, to record one of our landmark episodes, like our 200th episode,
dude,
250.
That's funny.
Cassette tape.
That's funny. That's how a lot of, honestly though, that's how a lot of rap guys got started. They would get these little tape recorders and just record mm-hmm. themselves freestyling and pass it around to try to get noticed. That's where that joke, listen to my demo, kind of came from.
That's a good point, actually. So, I mean, it's so easy, you know, to do that with tape. So like any other, like we've been saying, like even newer formats that have far surpassed cassettes in many other ways, that aspect of it has never really been outdone.
Yeah, that aspect of portability and convenience, that's a good point.
Yeah. So interestingly, like I said, the voiceograph kind of died in the 60s, but in the last 5 years or so, they've actually become popular again.
I've never seen one, really.
Not in the same way. Not that they were like, you know, at fairgrounds or whatever. Because, you know, they don't make them anymore. But interestingly, Jack White of the White Stripes.
He would.
Apparently a few years ago, he bought one of these and refurbished it. And now he has it publicly available at his Nashville, Tennessee storefront for his record label, Third Man Records.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually go onto their website and there's an FAQ about it. And, you know, you can actually go to their store and use this voiceograph box if you want.
That's really cool.
Which is cool. Neither of us are anywhere near Nashville. But
I was going to say, that would be like the only reason to go to Nashville for me is to go to and do that. No offense, Elvis lovers.
Yeah, I mean, if there was one near me, I would definitely go and check it out.
I was going to say, you live in the land of hipsters. I'm surprised there's not.
I know. So it's interesting to me that, and I think there's probably been a couple, like maybe one or two others that have been refurbished, like for at least like brief public use. So it's not like they're around again in the way that they were originally, but there are some that do still exist and have been kind of rebuilt. So the particular booth that Jack White owns, apparently a few notable artists have recorded their own singles in that booth. People like Weird Al, Weezer, Neil Young apparently used it to record his entire 2014 album, A Letter Home.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure how that works, because
how do you fit a whole band into the booth?
Well, I think he's just sitting in there with a guitar or something.
Yeah, probably. It's like acoustic or whatever.
So I know, like in the old days, these things, you could only record about a minute onto any given record.
Mm-hmm.
I think I read that in interviews, Jack White or somebody else said you could get about 2 minutes on it. So I don't know if that was maybe a later model, or if during the refurbishing they changed the tech behind it so that they could get more on there. I don't know.
Yeah.
I was actually curious about that. I looked at the track list of this Neil Young album, and some of those songs are 3 or 4 minutes long.
Hmm.
So I don't really know how that works.
Did you just,
like, or if he recorded like pieces of it on separate ones and then they stitched it together later?
That's what I'm thinking. Maybe there's like an original that is like all like the songs broken up, and then, I mean, they would obviously, if they want to mass produce it, they can't just keep, okay, do it again.
Right. Well, that's the other thing too, is that, like, I guess he's basically, what he's doing in that booth is he's recording the master copies.
Yeah, kind of.
And then they have to pull it from those in order to reproduce it elsewhere.
So it's more about the, at least for these artists, if they want to distribute the music, it's more about the novelty of the recording mechanism than it is about them being like, oh, yay, I have a recording of myself. Now I can't do anything with it. You know, they need to mass produce it somehow.
Right. Yeah, it is kind of a unique novelty thing, to, I guess, if nothing else, just to be able to say, hey, this is something that I did while making this album. I actually have not listened to any of like these songs or that album to hear if, like, can you tell he's recording it inside a phone box?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the sound of it is different, but if you listeners want to check it out, you should.
So, yeah, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's not like an oh my god, this is amazing sort of thing, but I just found it sort of interesting, and especially in the context of not really being able to find anything else in terms of like personal recording to vinyl.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, I see it as like a similar novelty to, like, you know, when photo booths were really popular in the 90s. I mean, they're still kind of popular some places or whatever. It's just funny that photo booths have lasted since forever, but these audio recording booths only lasted about 20 years, roughly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't think they're, to my knowledge, you know, I don't frequent fairgrounds and arcades, but I, to my knowledge, I don't think there's really a modern day equivalent to this.
No, I wouldn't imagine. I mean, what would be the point? You have a phone, which does all the same things and can't even record a video. So
yeah, I mean, yeah, if anything, it would be, it would like you could record like a 60 second or 30 second video of you and your friends in the booth doing whatever.
That's called a Snapchat.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, at the time of its demise, the personal tape recorder is probably one of the big reasons for it. But like nowadays, the reasons why it hasn't come back in a different form is because modern technology has just eliminated any reason for it.
Exactly.
So yeah, this is just a thing, I guess.
If any of you listeners are old enough to remember these things existing, how are you alive?
No one alive in the 1960s is still alive.
Exactly. They were all wiped out in the Vietnam War. Terrible.
Jesus.
I'm going to hell. Yeah. So if any of your listeners remember these things being around, or maybe your parents do, I don't know, let us know. You can reach us at facebook.com/getyourfunk. You can also reach us at soundcloud.com/getyourfunk, where we post the last 4 or 5 or 6 episodes, and you guys can comment and tell us all about it. You can also listen to us at mixcloud.com/getyourfunk, where we have our entire back catalog of episodes, but I don't think there's really a commenting system on there just yet.
There might be, but no one uses Mixcloud, so
yeah,
it's not really a social platform.
Good point. Yeah, it's more just a bare bones podcast platform for people who aren't on SoundCloud. We're also on Google Play, so you can bug us there, I think. Not sure. Or at least download the episodes.
Search for Funk Radio in the podcast section of the Google Play Music Store thing.
Our goal is to get up to the first podcast when you search the word funk. there's like 3 entire podcasts that come up when you search the word funk, and we're still at the bottom.
Or, listeners, you can say, okay, Google, I want to listen to Funk Radio.
And then Google says, how about you kill yourself instead? No, it just says, I'm sorry, I can't do that, Dave.
Oh, geez.
Terrible.
Thanks, Google.
Thank you for controlling our lives. So.
And screw you, iTunes, for never working.
Yeah.
So we're not on iTunes.
Sorry. Sorry, Apple fans. This has been your omnipotent tech overlord, Kyle.
And this has been your voice in a box, Peter.
Peter in a box.
Okay. Bye.
We love you.